I wonder how often you go to London or to a big city and look around you at the number of people coming and going hither and thither. And I wonder whether you're ever a bit like me and think, how can it possibly be that all these people exist and have full and complete lives, have families, have friends, have jobs, have homes, maybe don't have family and friends and jobs and homes, have history, have future, and I know nothing about it. Now, I guess when you're sort of 4 or 5, it's okay to have a very egocentric view of the world. Most people do grow out of that. I'm not sure that I ever have. I'm still baffled that these things can happen when I don't know about them. How can that be? Each person's life, relationships, experiences, memories, interpretations, understandings are unique. And I find that quite mind-boggling. As we look at this story today, we see a snapshot of several different lives all intersecting at a point in history. And each of them bring with them their own expectations and interpretations of the events as they unfold. As Matthew crafts the account, we get to see different reactions to this same event. And what an event! This baby, born, laid in a manger, in the relatively insignificant little town of Bethlehem, holds so much power and potential that each character has to react and respond one way or another. And this is something that recurs throughout the Gospel of Matthew. The presence of the messianic king, the one who is coming to restore Israel, to renew the relationship of all mankind with the Creator, demands decisions. And therefore he causes division between those who accept and those who reject him. And we see that very clearly here as we look at different kings within the story. So King Herod feels threatened. His power has been given to him by Rome. But he's gathered that there is a new ruler on the scene whose power people will believe has been given by God because of the star. That's what the Magi think. And the Magi themselves are often referred to as the kings in our story. That probably goes back to a reference in the Psalms where it talks about kings bringing to the Messiah their gifts and laying them at his feet. And so wise men, astrologers have kind of morphed into kings, certainly people with power. Three very different kinds of kings. The scared one, the humble one, the ones who are willing to learn more. So the Magi and Herod's reactions were the polar opposites of one another. Fear and faith, that's not a bad place to start, is it? Herod's fear led to the destruction of others. His mind was very closed and he wanted to protect himself. He saw this new ruler, this new king, as a potential threat. And if you carry on reading in Matthew 2, you'll see the lengths that he went to try and destroy him. I wonder if we ever act from fear in ways that are destructive to others as we try to protect ourselves. But the Magi come not with fear but with faith, and they're led to worship at the manger. They're open-minded, accepting the unknown things. And they were never the same after meeting Jesus. No one ever is. So, why does Matthew include this episode in his gospel? I think I'm right in saying that nobody else does. The Magi appear in his gospel alone. And it might be because his primary audience is the Jewish Christian community. So Jews who had become Christians were in conflict and debate with the larger group of Jews who had rejected Jesus. Both sides, the church and the synagogue, were claiming to be the true people of God. Both claimed Israel's scriptures as their legacies. So for Matthew's Jewish opponents, this movement of the church represented heresy, followers of a false Messiah. But for his own community, the prophecies have been fulfilled, and that's why he's eager to show how prophecies are fulfilled in the coming of Jesus, the Messiah. The church represents, in his view, the true people of God, made up of both Jews and Gentiles who've embraced Jesus as the Messiah and accepted his message of the kingdom of God. And that's the people to whom he's writing. So what else do we see? Well, one of the things that struck me for the first time as I looked at this week was that Israel's experience of foreign powers had been a fairly negative one for the last four centuries. They'd been the underdogs. They'd been forced into exile, slavery, and servitude. So when the Magi appeared, I don't suppose that they were expecting humility and adoration from these powerful people from the east. The deal before had always been that the weaker nation would offer gifts to the stronger one if they thought they were going to be taken over, in the hope that they'd be protected and treated with justice and mercy. And in all the problems that they'd had, their oppressors had come generally from the east. The Babylonians had sent them off. They'd gone into exile. So Matthew is turning their history on its head. He's making a very strong point here, saying these kings, these magi, these wise men, have come not to take over the Jewish nation, they have come to bow down to God. It's a significant image, isn't it? This baby is the king. He's the ruler not only of the Jews, Matthew's saying, but also of the whole region and even the whole world. Nations that have previously oppressed the Israelites are coming to pay homage to the one who would save them too. And what's also in Matthew's mind is that the Gentiles, those considered alien to God's purposes, are exhibiting an openness to him, even through their own strange ways of doing that. And they're eagerly receptive to this newborn king. They follow their star. They start with what they know and what they understand. And they follow and come willing to bow down to him. So Matthew's also showing how the events fulfill Old Testament prophecies. He talks about Jesus being from the line of David. And we see him in Bethlehem, that place that they have known the Messiah would come. God's plan for the Jewish people from the very beginning had been that they would be the light for the nations. The idea was that he would have a group of people who would live in relationship with him, who would be obedient, who would enjoy his blessing, who would shine amongst those people that they found themselves with, to such an extent that people would say, "Look at that, this must be the way to live. We want to know more," that people would be drawn in, wanting to follow their example. But we know from the Old Testament that the roller coaster ride had shown that they were not faithful, that they didn't live up to that promise. And here now is Jesus, from the heart of that nation. He's going to fulfill Israel's Old Testament mandate. He's going to be the one who will reveal God's glory and take the message of salvation to the ends of the earth. And here, at the very beginning of the gospel, we see the ends of the earth coming to him as God draws them. We also know that Matthew wants to show us that Jesus is God with us. Emmanuel, that's what it means. Jesus, this baby, is born in a lowly village, not in the palace, not where the Magi went to look for him. And when they come across him, he's not with an entourage of bodyguards and courtiers. We're told that he's with his mother, Mary. And these important men come and bow down before the infant and his mother. Jesus, God with us in the ordinary places, in the humble places, approachable by kings, by magi, by shepherds. Everyone is welcome in his presence. So I think that's why Matthew included this story, to make those points that the Old Testament prophecies were being fulfilled, that all the nations could come into his presence and Jesus would be the one who would draw them all back to him, and that Jesus is God with us. So what can we learn today from it? Well, I think that it tells us about God, it tells us about Jesus, and it tells us about ourselves. It tells us about God, firstly, that he can work in ways beyond our understanding, and that he chooses to reveal himself. When we think of astrology now, we all go, ooh, terrible stuff, because we associate it with the back of newspapers and magazines where you're going to meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger, or come into a piece of very good fortune if you travel in the right direction on the right day. That's not what this was about. These wise men were using their logic, their reasoning. It wasn't really superstition. As they saw the stars or the planets aligning in certain ways, they believed that the Creator God was at work, that the things in the heavens and the things on the earth were connected. That was their view. And God used that. It may not be how we would see it today, but God used it and drew them through their own understanding. He chooses to reveal himself. He had given prophecies. He had given people explanations of what would come. And as they saw these things coming true, it gave them confidence in God's overarching hold of the world and circumstances. It tells us about Jesus. We see that he was born in a lowly place, but foretold and revealed in glorious ways. Born, laid in a manger, but spoken about centuries beforehand. Revealed as angels came and brought good news, and in Matthew's gospel, revealed as the stars came into alignment. It tells us that he was a baby, but the King of Kings. The Magi wouldn't have travelled all that way, bearing gifts for any old baby. They were looking for a very special king. It tells us that his gospel, the good news of Jesus, is for all people who are willing to seek him humbly, not just for the chosen people, for those who thought they were chosen. And it shows us that everybody has to respond to Jesus one way or the other. And those who meet Jesus will experience transformation. So going back to all those characters that we see as we trundle through the city or just walk through Reigate, all the people in this story had to respond. The Magi responded when they saw the star. Herod responded when he heard what he perceived of as a threat. And he called in the teachers and the priests. And he said to them, "What do you know? Where is this child going to be?" And they knew their Old Testament. And they said, "He's going to be somewhere, probably in Bethlehem, because that's what it says." They had that knowledge, but they didn't choose to go. Don't you think you'd be just a tiny bit curious if you thought that was going to be where he'd be and someone came from a far country and said, "We've heard that there's something significant happening"? Don't you think you'd be just a tiny bit curious? And yet none of them could get off their backsides to go and see. So they responded by ignoring it. And the Magi, who responded with faith, were changed when they met him. They chose not to go back the same way. Herod had specifically said to them, "I want you to come back and tell me when you found him." But they were wise. And Herod had a very, very bad reputation. So when God says to them, "I want you to go home a different route," they hear his voice and they obey. So I think it tells us about ourselves as well, that sometimes we're more concerned with defending the status quo than seeking truth. Sometimes we're all a little bit like Herod. Sometimes we're all a little bit like the chief priests and the teachers of the law. But it tells us that curiosity and open-mindedness is sometimes far more powerful than qualifications. It's not about how much you know. It's about how much you trust and how much you seek. And it tells us that if our eyes and ears are open and tuned in, God will speak and direct our paths. So what might God want to show us? Well, having thought about all those different characters, my question really is, who do you identify with in this story today? Do you think you'd fit in well with the Magi? Ready for an adventure? Ready to take costly things with you? Can't have been very safe travelling with gold in your camel's backpack, side pannier, whatever. Do you identify perhaps a little bit with Herod? Worried that someone else might come and take your place, that perhaps you'll lose some of your power if you come to Jesus. Perhaps he'll make demands that mean you have to give things up that you're not ready to give up. The teachers of the law and the priests, that you're pretty sure you know how all this works and that it's okay, but perhaps not that interested in being challenged or pushed or questioned. Perhaps you identify with Mary. I think Mary sat there and pondered so many things. And yet she stayed. So who do you identify with? And what does that tell you about your relationship with God at the moment? We all have to choose which direction we're going to go on our journeys through life. We have to decide which signs we're looking out for or which maps we're going to use. Some of us rely on others to point us in the right direction most of the time, or we don't feel the need to refer to a map because we're in a route that we know very well, going the same way to the same place. Have you ever had that experience of turning up at how on earth you got there? Because your mind has been completely somewhere else on your journey. We can work on autopilot if we aren't careful, and we can do that. Come to church, go to life group, have our quiet times, and tick the boxes without ever really allowing God to disturb us. Sometimes we become aware of the need to look at a map for ourselves, maybe because we're curious about the landmarks around us, something sparks our interest, or because we're facing something we haven't had to face before, and we need to know how to deal with it. We need to know what God thinks. What journey are you on this year? For some people, there will be new territory to negotiate, unfamiliar paths to walk down, new adventures to experience. Are we willing to step out like the wise men? Maybe for some of us, it's time to get out the old maps again, to check the landscape and notice new features. Maybe for some of us, it's time to invest in a new map that's up to date. Dust off the Bible. Come on Alpha. Join a life group. Curiosity, openness was the thing that led to transformation. Let's try and be curious. I wonder how we'll respond to what God reveals. I found rather a nice poem earlier, which I think sums up a bit of what I wanted to say. It's called Rise Within Us Like a Star, and it's a prayer. Beckoning God, who called the rich to travel to the wise to embrace your folly, the powerful to know their own frailty, who gave to strangers a sense of homecoming in an alien land, and to stargazers true light and vision as they bowed to earth. We lay ourselves open to your signs for us. Stir us up with holy discontent over a world which gives its gifts to those who have plenty already, whose talents are obvious, whose power is recognized. And help us both to share our resources with those who have little and to receive with humility the gifts they bring to us. Rise within us like a star and make us restless till we journey forth to seek our rest in you. Amen.